for now from Victoria Williamson and Philip Ball, and from me, Tom Service. Well, it's 6 o'clock, time to head over to the street for a live Why Music Jazz lineup with Julian Joseph. Julian, looks as if you've got something pretty special for us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, hello and welcome to a very special edition of Jazz Lineup coming from the street at Welcome Collection in London. Today's programme is part of BBC Radio 3's Why Music residency at this fascinating venue billed as a destination for incurably curious. It houses a variety of artefacts from the worlds of medicine, the arts, and science, exploring ideas, the connections between them, throughout history, right up to the present day. This is a modern manifestation of a museum, encouraging difference, wonder, and the unusual. The spaces here delve into contemporary and historic aspects with exhibitions, collections, their celebrated library, and live events, hence our occupation of this most fertile of places. On today's show, I'll be asking the big question, why is music such an important part of being a human? From brainwaves to humans improvising with technology, there'll be music from pianist Neil Cowley, there'll be flautist and saxophonist Finn Peters, exploring with his group how synthetically produced music and improvising melds with and interacts with human music making. But our first artist is a man who, for decades, has explored his own relationship with improvisation, composition, style, and musical interaction. His craft spans a huge range of investigation, from the innovations of saxophonist Charlie Parker, attending the Banff Center for the Arts in Canada under the direction of the famed fellow alto saxophone explorer Steve Coleman, collaborations with free improvisers, Indian musicians, I could easily go on. In fact, in addition to music, he's passionate and knowledgeable in the subject of nutritional medicine. Ladies and gentlemen, the guest who is our perfect first guest, please show your appreciation for saxophonist Martin Speak. And Martin is going to perform a solo saxophone version of Stars Fell on Alabama. Thank you. Martin Speak and the Parish and Perkins composition from 1934, Stars Fell on Alabama. Welcome, Martin. It's really great to hear you play.
Thanks very much, Julian.
Why music? Why music? Why is music so important to you?
It's really difficult to put into words. I always think words are a bit of a simplistic way of describing something that's pretty impossible to describe in words. I suppose, and actually as I get older, I try to be more intuitive in my relationship with it. So I'm not sure really what I can answer your question, apart from the fact that maybe anyone who gets into music, something's triggered early on in life. You know, you hear something when you're quite young and you feel like an emotional connection with it. Maybe that's something set me off early on.
So early on, what was your recollection of actually discovering the power of music? When did that become a reality? Because I guess it's probably not even a conscious reality, but when did it impact on you?
I tell you a really interesting experience, which I think this kind of experience has died out in this country now, but my grandmother was a pub piano player and she couldn't read music at all. And I remember when I used to, real Londoner as well, from King's Cross, my family originally, and I remember as a child going to visit, and what would happen, she'd be playing down the pub, and then everyone would come back from the pub, and she would sit at the piano, and everyone would take a turn singing a song. Right. And that was my memory of part of my childhood when I visited my grandmother. And I have a feeling that sort of thing is dying out, to be honest. You know, piano being in every household, sure. And the social connection of music, rather than as an elitist art form or something. I saw it that people were just having fun singing songs together. And I think that's why I like actually those old songs now, right. The standards. This kind of song is from that era. This is the 30s, right?
That's right. Do you find that there are medicinal properties in music?
You're prompting me here. It's really healing. It can be really healing for all kinds of people. Definitely, yeah.
And in what kind of way? Is it just because it brings a calming force? Do you think it taps into the DNA somehow? Do you think it...
I think it does both of those things, actually. But it's different with different people. Certain things resonate with some people. You know, I wrote this on a website somewhere. I was thinking, why does some piece of music that I listen to bring me to tears? Like Charlie Parker playing Embraceable You, and somebody else can hear the same thing and it doesn't mean anything to them.
Right.
So I'm just wondering whether it's not intrinsic in the notes that he's playing. Otherwise, it would resonate with everybody. So I think it's people's individual background, I suppose, that makes people connect with certain pieces of music. But other pieces of music people love, I might not like. I don't know. Am I answering any of your questions?
Well, no. I often wonder if it's that we're tapping into something universal, and sometimes there's either a blockage or you need something to open you up to resonating there, or, you know?
Well, I'm totally with that viewpoint. In aspects of health, yep. You know, in the body,
right.
That's certainly true. That in this kind of modern society, I think there are a lot of blockages, emotional, physical, nutritional blockages in all of us, and that actually kind of energy medicine, for example, such as acupuncture or homeopathy, and probably music, can release those blockages, certainly. I mean, for instance, just the thing of coming to... crying when somebody hears music, that's a release.
Yes.
So that's definitely a healing thing, I feel, anyway.
Yeah. Well, it triggers something to bring balance, perhaps. Or,
yeah.
Or whatever it is. Well, maybe it isn't balance. Maybe it's tipping the balance in your favour somehow.
Hopefully, yeah.
Well, Martin, what are you going to play for us next?
Am I doing another one now, then?
You certainly are. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to improvise on something, I think.
Good.
Okay.
That sounds good to me.
What should I do with this? Oh, I'm talking about a microphone in case you can't hear me online.
Actually, sorry, I got that completely wrong. You're not doing another one right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad this is quite improvised, this show.
Improvised.
I can do another one if necessary.
No, I'm completely wrong. You're doing another one.
Am I?
That's the.
What should I play?
Thanks.
Thank you.
Solo saxophone improvising of Mr. Martin Speak. And we're going to hear more from Martin later on in the show. And our next guest was a classical protege who was very much forged his own path in the trio setting, combining a contemporaneous infusion of rock and pop influences into the more usually jazz setting of the piano trio. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the pianist and band leader, Neil Cowley.
Thank you.
Very good to have you here, Neil. We're in a world of ideas. As a musician, what is your creative process?
A lot of solitude, a fair amount of self-loathing, doubting that I can do anything at all, lots of time spent in a little shed at the end of my garden, sort of hammering away at the piano until I find something that I can, that I still like in a week's time. It's a hard process. It's not a process that I necessarily enjoy. I'm always giving myself a hard time over how little I enjoy that part of the process. It's only when the band get involved later on that it starts to become fun, and then the ultimate fun is playing it live, and then it's just utter hilarity at that point. So it's a quite a steep graph, I'd say.
So it's a process of generation and then regeneration.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I like to turn up with all the questions answered, so that I've got an answer for everything. Basically, I like to have an answer for everything.
Forethought, you see.
That's it. Yeah.
What would your world be like? You said that sometimes it surprises you how much you it pains you to go through that process. But what would your world be like without music?
That's very hard to say. There are members of my family who for whom music is the centre of their universe, but they don't necessarily play an instrument. So right. I think it would. It's a sense of the hairs on the back of the neck going up, and that's a good feeling. It's a sense that you're in connection with something. Without that, for me, it's now become sort of, it's part workaholic. You know, the whole thing is a workaholic thing, and it's part therapy. And now I'm just so stubborn, I won't let it go. So it's the be all of everything from morning, noon till night. You know, it's a quite a heavy weight. You know, in some ways, because you want to do it justice. You want to sort of try and mine your talent if you have one, and you want to do it justice. So I think it becomes a heavier burden, actually.
Well, music has such a profound effect on us. You talk about the hairs going up on the back of your neck. I mean, in what other ways do you think music affects us, and what do you think that effect is?
Well, I think for me, it's the great spirituality. I mean, I think people connect with spirituality in their own separate ways. Mine is just the feeling I get on stage when I'm playing music with other people or when I'm connecting with an audience. That feeling for me is everything that spirituality should give you. It's just this sense of something else that you can't explain, you can't put it into words, as Martin was saying, you can't put it into words, but it's just a feeling of being almost part of not just this herd, but a universal herd. And that makes you feel not alone, and that's really important.
It offers a profound avenue for communication then, doesn't it? Because it requires no words, the ways that we think are direct.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I don't have a vocalist in my band, because I think it confuses the issue. I'm touched by the music that just touches me without... Because I don't hear lyrics. You know, I can hear a singer sing, and I actually prefer listening to someone like Liz Fraser from the Cocteau Twins, because she doesn't sing in a language, she invents her own language. And that touches me more, because it still means as much as... You can hear in the sounds that she's making, the feeling. I can't explain it, but it's a feeling, and I don't need words to feel that. It's just this level.
Well, you're going to play solo piano for us, and what is your first piece going to be?
Well, this is a brand new piece. This has got a working title of Grace.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Neil Cowley and Grace.
Thank you. I'm now going to play a little piece that we love to play in my trio. And this is a tune called Hug the Greyhound, about a friend of ours who looks like a greyhound dog. Thank you.
pianist Neil Cowley with Hug the Greyhound for his friend who looks like a greyhound. And more music from Neil later on the programme. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on digital radio, broadcasting from Welcome Collection, London. Well, let's have a listen now to some music by Austrian musician Manu Delago. Having studied both classical and jazz percussion, he's focused on playing the hang, which in the world of sound is quite simply an extraordinary sounding instrument. Sometimes referred to as the hang drum, it sits on your lap and is played as a percussion instrument with the bare hands, no mallets required. The instrument is made from two moderately sized metallic half shells, like two giant woks, that when crafted and glued together produces a warm resonant steel pan-like sound. Manu plays regularly with Icelandic songstress Björk and knows how to bring this instrument to life, weaving the natural hang sounds with electronic textures. Instrument and machine in perfect harmony. So from his new disc on True Thoughts, this is Sun in the North from Manu Delago. Sound of Manu Delago and Sun in the North, and the exotic and mysterious interspersion of the hang peppered with electronics. Well, our next guest was getting on stage during that song, and he can certainly play his instrument and has been innovating a way forward musically using mind mapping technology to create sounds and inspiration that the band feed off of, imaginatively combining electronics in real time with a variety of grooves, sounds, atmosphere, and cohesion. Please give a welcome to a fine group with Finn Peters, and it's Matthew Yee King. He's the Senior Research Fellow at the Department of Computing at Goldsmiths University on computer. Dave Price is on vibes. Nick Ram is on piano. John Edwards is on double bass. Tom Skinner is on drums. And the leader of the group is Mr. Finn Peters on flute and saxophone. Now, yes, please, show your appreciation. To perform Sleep Music 2, originally recorded for his Music of the Mind album, It's Finn Peters and his group.
Thank you.
The sound of the Finn Peters Group and Sleep Music 2. And later tonight, you can experience composer, keyboardist, and electronics maestro Max Richter's continuous sleep cycle-inspired composition. So tonight at midnight, be sure to keep your radios on at your bedside for Sleep, an 8-hour lullaby for a frenetic world, which is meant to be heard whilst sleeping. That coming up later tonight on BBC Radio 3. Well, that was Finn Peters and his band with music from Music of the Mind. It's a project that Finn has had utilizing the brain-computer interface software to literally think music into being. Finn's thoughts are turned into music that then inspires and triggers the members of the band. And it is my pleasure to speak with Finn Peters and Matthew Yeeking from the group. Finn, you're adorned with some. You were adorned with that headgear in your hand. Tell us what that's doing.
So this is a commercial-grade brain-computer interface, and by a company called NeuroSky, who sponsored us for Music of the Mind, and we were using these to. I actually used it on the last piece to generate music via some software that Matthew's developed for it. With this, I think the more agitated I got, the more agitated the music became. That's how it seemed to work earlier on. Is that right?
Yeah, it was kind of looking at the energy levels going on in your brain, the different frequency bands, and using those to control the sound. And it sort of as you became more engaged, and it became to throb.
So was it concentration levels? So before, when we were using these ones, we were using concentration levels mainly because they seem to work best to alter the pitches of notes. So the more that we concentrated, basically the higher the note went. And we also used this headset also for meditation. That didn't work as well, even though we're very good at meditating. Yeah, on stage it wasn't working so good.
Well, I'm fascinated as to what makes you come up with the software, Matthew, to put something like this into action. And would you say that it works really well in your thinking on the improvisational aspect of the music making that goes on here?
I think it's a really nice example of taking something from science and working really directly with an artist who has a really strong vision, and being able to apply these kind of techniques from science to really stretch out and play around with them and make them available to an artist so that they can explore their own ideas and creativity through those new techniques that they wouldn't have access to otherwise.
Do you think it's brought a completely different way of thinking for you, Finn, in terms of your compositional, well, yes, in your compositional process, but in terms of the result and where you might go? Because whether we are fascinated by improvising with computers, there is a distinct compositional clarity and cohesion in the way you guys make your music.
Yeah, definitely. It was. I'm always interested in new ways of composing music, and this was no exception. It all started out when Matthew introduced me to Dr. Mick Grierson, and he used me in a sort of as a guinea pig in an experiment that he had, where you could look at a note and choose one of 64 notes on a computer screen, and it would the computer, using a medical grade encephalogram and brain-computer interface, the computer could tell which note you were thinking of. And this completely blew my mind. I thought, well, if that's the case, can I not just stick one of these on, think of one monophonic line, one melody line, and just link that up to the printer and just get it to print the parts up? We didn't actually get to that level with it, but we got money for research and development, and we, along with Matthew and Mick Grierson, developed software. We took brainwave patterns from myself when I was asleep, and we mapped them musically. So brainwaves are very low in the frequency spectrum, so we had to boost them to an audible frequency spectrum. And for that last piece that you just heard, we used 8 electrodes. So we were getting 8 notes per reading. There's a lot of readings. And then so I was getting octatonic collections and then using them to form the basis of that piece. And then we were talking earlier about time as well.
Yeah, this idea of kind of freezing time. The music on that album, which is for sale, folks, is actually, you know, a frozen sculpture of what Finn's brain was doing at a moment in time. So, you know, we took readings, pretty accurate readings with a pretty good quality device of his brain, and turned them into melodies. And they're now frozen. You know, a tiny microsecond of Finn's brain activity is frozen on that album, which I think is quite a nice philosophical concept, maybe.
Also, the musical material that was coming out of especially with the sleep brainwaves, was leading me in a very different way harmonically. It was kind of obtuse and oblique, and some of it didn't. It wasn't like the normal music that I'd been writing before. So yeah, it was definitely a departure in that sense.
Well. Finn, when I'm listening to the things that you're sourcing as inspiration, really, it's not fair to say it's passive, but I wondered, and Matthew, you can chip in on this, is there a way that you have to train your brain, or that you could train your brain, to be more interactive with it, just from your mind, to actually create notes and...
Definitely. When we got onto the more commercial grade headsets, I was able to practice using the software that Matt had developed, mostly using concentration techniques. And I got to learn how to play the instrument a lot better. So that was good.
Do you think you'll ever be able to play the instrument as you play the flute?
I think that might take another 36 years, maybe. But we'll see.
Well, because that's the thing. There's potential to really open the mind up and connect in a way that we're not used to, which really focuses all your mental acuity to produce something specific.
Yeah, I hear that. But on the other hand, this instrument is great because anyone can play it. Right. And I think that's really good as well. So, you know, there's two sides to the coin with that, I think.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of how you make it more profound, maybe. Like the way you're a virtuoso flautist. Can you be a virtuoso mental computer cat?
I think this is an interesting point, actually, Julian, because people have been mapping brainwaves to music for quite a long time. I mean, it's a bit of a niche area, admittedly. But often you can map it in such a way that it wouldn't really matter what the data was that you were feeding into it. You could be feeding data from a Tesco shopping list and the result would sound the same, because the musical material that you're using to map it with might be something that's a five-note pattern, so it would sound pretty samey, whatever the stimulus is. We were trying to get away from that and, you know, get more into what you're talking about. As in the end result would be something that's more specifically human.
Sure. Well, we're doing a lot of talking, so I'm going to hand over to Finn Peters and his remarkable group for their next piece. And Finn, you can set up what the piece is, please.
This piece is called One State of Mind.
One State of Mind, featuring a piano solo from Nick Ram. And Finn Peters is on the tenor saxophone. And there's more music from Finn and the band later on the show. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on digital radio, broadcasting from Welcome Collection in London. Well, we bring back to the stage our special guest on alto saxophone, Mr. Martin Speak. And it's time for me to challenge Martin now to improvise, interacting with Matthew Yeeking, improvising algorithms through his computer. Ladies and gentlemen, Martin Speak and Matthew Yeeking. The computer algorithms of Matthew Yeeking and Martin Speak on the alto. Martin interacting with Matthew's improvising algorithm. Well, it's not only saxophonists and computers that can take the center stage, as I'd like to invite bassist John Edwards as one of the premier free improvisers to take the stage to connect to us through the unique palette he both creates and draws from on the acoustic bass. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John Edwards. The action-packed solo acoustic bass from John Edwards. And now we return to the sounds of pianist Neil Cowley and Lament.
That was Lament from Neil Cowley, contemplative orchestral musics. How do you prepare playing solo piano? You said you relish playing with the trio when you prepare in your
shed. How do I prepare to play solo piano? Just a case of dealing with the nerves, really, and feeling that lack of a whopping great mattress, a rhythm section mattress around you. And I play a lot. I mean, every day I play at home, and that's obviously a solo piano affair because there's no one in the room with me. Kids have gone to school. I get straight on the piano. And it's like, apparently Virginia Woolf couldn't write a note until she... Not write a note, she couldn't write a word until she'd gone on something like a 10-mile walk. And I feel with the piano, it's very much like that. You have to sort of stretch yourself a bit, get into sort of 2 hours of it, and then you start to find stuff. So I think, I'm like Virginia Woolf in that respect.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's not only a mental relationship, it's a very physical relationship that you have with the piano. And sometimes you've got to walk through those forests, so to speak, on the instrument so that you can brush off the cobwebs.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of muscle memory in there. There's a lot of, it's a lot of fitness. It's just sort of not fitness anywhere that you can necessarily see it. It doesn't look good in the gym. but there is a lot of fitness from brain to hand. Yeah. You have to warm up and possibly warm down, although I never do that properly, I don't think.
None of us do. How much does the space you play in affect the way you play? I mean, you're creating in a shed. If you weren't creating in a shed and it was a much bigger place, what would that do to your music?
Well, I'm learning that more and more. I sort of engineer situations now where I can be in a large room with a beautiful acoustic, and that does make me write in a completely different way. I mean, just, you know, in this place, I mean, there's a long reverb in here, or longer than some anyway, and that means you give yourself more space when you're writing and playing. You can let the room, you're playing the room then rather than just the piano. I mean, as you say, when I'm in the shed, it's over, you hit a note, it's over pretty soon, so it's just me and the piano, whereas in here, the room is then the instrument as well.
It's interesting that you're in the shed, literally. That's something we all say in jazz music, or in music, when you're practicing, you're in the shed. But one more question. Are you tempted to connect with computers in the way that Finn and Matthew are experimenting?
Yeah, I mean, recently in writing, I've try to communicate with, you know, machines, for want of a better term. We live in an age where, you know, we spend most of our time looking down at that thing in our palm, and that's obviously, you know, our thumbs are getting more and more, you know, they're adapting to the new evolution. You have to engage with that if you're going to sort of be contemporary, I suppose. I'm tempted, I'm interested. I think it's a wonderful new thing that we, you know, this is extremely new in the sense of all the millennia that humans have been around. This is a brand new, exciting moment. And yeah, you've got to jump on those things, I think.
Well, perhaps we'll get to see a little bit of that later. Ladies and gentlemen, Neil Cowley. And more music now from the Finn Peters Group. Who are Finn Peters on flute and saxophone? Matthew Yeeking on computer. Dave Price on the vibes. Nick Ram on the piano. John Edwards is on double bass. Tom Skinner is on the drums. This is the Finn Peters Group and Amygdala. Thank you.
the Finn Peters Group, ladies and gentlemen, and Amygdala. And that almost draws us to a close for today's edition of Jazz Lineup. My thanks to everyone behind the scenes here at Welcome Collection and all of the artists featured on today's program, including saxophonist Martin Speak, whose earlier rendition of Stars Fell on Alabama was dedicated to the wonderful British alto saxophonist Ray Worley, who passed away earlier this week. Also, we heard pianist Neil Cowley and saxophonist flautist Finn Peters, plus his band featuring drummer Tom Skinner, John Edwards on the double bass, Dave Price on vibraphone, pianist Nick Ram, and on computer, Matthew Yeeking. To finish now, in a Radio 3 exclusive, all the musicians are going to collaborate in an experiment with a free-thinking, improvising computer with a mind of its own. From all of us here at Welcome, it's a very good night. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
That was Jazz Lineup with Improvisation with Three Thinking Computer, and the producer was Sushil K. Dade and the presenter was Julian Joseph. I'm Claudia Hammond, you're listening to BBC Radio 3 and Wellcome Collection's Why Music Weekend. And now it's time for music as medicine. For thousands of years, writers have ascribed curative and therapeutic powers to music. The 16th century composer William Byrd wrote, "Since singing is so good a thing, I wish all men would learn to sing." Now, in my work presenting programmes about health and well-being on BBC Radio 4, where I'm more often found, it's clear that the impact not just of singing, but of other music on health, both physical and mental, can be profound. Now, tonight I've changed networks and come over to Radio 3 to spend the evening discussing how music can soothe the fevered brow, but also the other side, how unfortunately being a musician can sometimes make you ill. Now, we're broadcasting live from a pop-up studio in the Cafe at Wellcome Collection in London. I can see all sorts of people outside, and Radio 3 is here for the whole weekend devoted to the topic, why music. Throughout the evening, a number of guests will be dropping by. We'll have psychologists, doctors and music therapists, and the opera singer and broadcaster Mary King will be here throughout the evening. Thank you for joining us tonight, Mary. Now, the Wellcome Collection is the perfect place to discuss this topic, I think, because it is packed with extraordinary medical curiosities and curiosities of all sorts of kinds. What have you seen today?
Well, actually, I've just had a quick look at the Alice Anderson exhibit, which is lots of copper-wired objects. I'll rephrase that. Objects wrapped in copper wire, which is extraordinarily beautiful. It's allegedly about memory. I couldn't quite get that, but there were some fantastically evocative things in there.
They're amazing, aren't they? I mean, they've got a whole a wheelbarrow that's covered in copper wire and tubes of paint and a whole kayak and even boring things like remote controls for a video somehow seem interesting once they're covered in copper wire for some reason.
Yes, I thought the best thing was the staircase to nowhere, you know, the floating
That's beautiful.
Staircase.
Beautiful,
I think it's
copper,
just
shiny
absolutely
staircase.
Beautiful and does make you think a lot.
Well, in tonight's programme, we'll be looking at everything from the virtual reality environment, which can help performers to overcome anxiety, to the vocal nodules, which every singer fears. And we'll have music from J.S. Bach to Olivier Messiaen. But we begin by looking at the effect of both listening to and playing music on the mind and on the body. And we're joined by two academics who've devoted their careers to researching this topic. Professor of Health Education at Canterbury Christchurch University, Stephen Clift, who's also the editor of the Journal of Arts and Health, and Professor Günter Kreutz from Oldenburg University in Germany. Now, thank you very much for coming, both of you. Now, let me ask both of you, in one way, it seems obvious that listening to music or singing or playing an instrument could make us feel good, otherwise people wouldn't do it. So why do we need to study it? Why do we need to know why that works? Stephen?
I think it is important to do some research on this topic. Of course, people who choose to sing and who enjoy it will report benefits from it. But many people don't sing. And in fact, a lot of people regard themselves as not being able to sing. So I think encouraging people to engage in something that involves the body, involves the mind, involves